Welcome to the Local Business Playbook. I'm Alex, and today we are diving into something that I think is going to genuinely surprise a lot of our listeners, because we are not talking about cannabis from the grower's perspective or even the retailer's perspective, right? We are talking about the dirt beneath their feet, the actual real estate. And honestly, Alex, when you first pitched this topic, I was like, okay, this is going to be niche. But then I started looking into the numbers, and I was completely floored. The numbers are wild. So let's set the stage here. As of 2026, 38 states have legalized medical cannabis, and 24 allow adult recreational use. That is a massive, massive footprint of demand for specialized commercial space. And while traditional retail and office space have been on a bit of a roller coaster, to put it kindly, cannabis has emerged as one of the most unconventional and highest yielding tenant categories in the entire country. We are talking cap rates in the 7 to 10% range. For anyone who is not deep in commercial real estate, that is a massive premium over what you would see from a conventional commercial tenant in the same market. But, and this is the big but, you cannot just buy a strip mall and start collecting dispensary rent tomorrow. There is so much more going on under the surface. Zoning maps that look like Swiss cheese, lease agreements that have to account for a business that is still technically federally illegal, which is such a wild tension to sit with, right? Like, it is a multi-billion dollar industry operating in a legal gray zone. So today, we want to break down the four types of cannabis facilities, the zoning traps that catch even seasoned developers, and what this all looks like specifically here in Florida as we head toward what could be a massive recreational expansion. Let's start with the four pillars, because I think a lot of people hear cannabis real estate and they just picture a dispensary. But it is so much more than that.
Totally.
So in the real estate world, cannabis properties break down into four distinct categories: dispensaries, cultivation facilities, processing labs, and distribution centers. And each one has a completely different risk profile and physical requirement. Start with dispensaries, because that is the one most people can picture. So dispensaries are your retail play, typically smaller spaces, 1,500 to 5,000 square feet. But unlike leasing to, say, a coffee shop, a dispensary needs high visibility locations with intense security. We are talking reinforced walls, vault rooms, sophisticated surveillance systems. And because of all the zoning hurdles, which we will get into, these sites are genuinely rare. That scarcity means dispensaries are often paying 15 to 30% above market rent for comparable retail space, which as a landlord sounds pretty great.
Right? The rarity is the value driver there. Now move to the other end of the spectrum, cultivation. This is the heavy industrial side. We're talking 5,000 to 100,000 square feet. These are not just warehouses. These are high-tech greenhouses or indoor climate-controlled facilities.
And the power requirements are insane. I was reading about this. A massive cultivation site can require as much electricity as a small neighborhood. You need advanced HVAC, humidity control, specialized lighting. The build-out cost is enormous,
which is exactly why landlords can command 20 to 40% rent premiums over standard industrial tenants. The specialization is what drives the premium. And then you have processing and extraction labs. This is where the science happens, turning raw plants into oils, edibles, concentrates.
Oh, and this is where it gets really specific from a real estate standpoint. These spaces need chemical-rated ventilation and explosion-proof electrical systems because of the solvents used in extraction. That is not your average build-out.
Not even close. And because of that, processing labs actually see the highest rent premiums of all four categories, sometimes 50% above market. The cost to build them out and the specificity of the permitting just makes them incredibly scarce.
And then the fourth pillar is distribution, the logistics hub. 5,000 to 50,000 square feet, loading docks, high-end climate control. They look like standard industrial warehouses on the outside, but you are moving high-value products that are still largely cash-based. So security is everything.
And those command 10 to 25% higher rents over comparable industrial space. So across all four categories, the premium is real. The question is, how do you actually find a property that is legally usable for any of this? And that brings us to zoning.
Oh, the zoning conversation. Okay, so I want to explain this in a way that really lands, because this is the part that trips up even experienced developers. Alex, you called it the setback labyrinth, which I think is perfect.
It really is a labyrinth. In a standard commercial project, you check if you are in a retail or industrial zone and you are mostly good. With cannabis, that is just the starting line. Most jurisdictions require you to be 500 to 1,000 feet away from schools, public and private, same distance from churches, parks, playgrounds.
And here's the kicker. Many cities have anti-clustering rules, so you also have to be at least 1,000 feet away from any other cannabis facility,
When you start drawing those circles on a map of somewhere like Miami or Orlando, the zones that are actually usable just shrink to almost nothing. In a dense urban grid, those overlapping exclusions can eliminate 70 to 90% of all commercially zoned parcels. 70 to 90%. So if you happen to own a piece of land that falls in one of those rare green zones, its value can literally double overnight, because it is one of the only places a multi-million dollar business is legally allowed to exist. That scarcity premium is real. But, and this is so important, zoning is not static. Right, a new daycare opening across the street during your permitting process can kill a project before it even starts. This is why due diligence in cannabis real estate is not just about the soil and the structure. It is about local politics and long-term city planning. You almost have to be a part-time politician just to play in this space. Okay, let's talk leases, because this is where it gets really nuanced for landlords. So leasing to a cannabis tenant is fundamentally different from leasing to any other commercial tenant. The biggest factor is the federal illegality. Cannabis is still federally illegal, and while the government has largely taken a hands-off approach to state legal businesses, the risk of asset forfeiture is a non-zero factor that your lenders will absolutely bring up. And speaking of lenders, banking is the biggest structural hurdle in this whole space. Most traditional banks will not provide a mortgage on a building that houses a cannabis tenant. So investors often have to go through private money or specialized REITs, which come with higher interest rates. So your lease has to reflect that elevated risk. Most cannabis leases are triple net, NNN, meaning the tenant covers taxes, insurance, and maintenance. But you also need very specific clauses that you would not find in a typical commercial lease. Like a reversionary clause. What happens if the tenant's state license gets revoked? That is not a hypothetical. Licenses get pulled. You need to know what your rights are in that situation. And then there is Section 280E of the Federal Tax Code, which is brutal for cannabis operators. It prevents them from deducting standard business expenses. It puts enormous strain on their cash flow. As a landlord, you need to be deep in their financials to make sure they can survive the tax bill every year, which is not something most landlords are used to doing. And then there is the improvement question. If a tenant spends $2 million on specialized HVAC and electrical for a cultivation site, who owns that equipment when they leave? Because that equipment is often what makes the building valuable to the next cannabis tenant.
Exactly. The improvement clauses matter enormously in this space.
Okay, let's bring it home to Florida specifically, because this is the local business playbook, and Florida is where a lot of our listeners are building. Florida is already one of the largest medical cannabis markets in the world, which I think surprises people. And the current model is vertical integration. The companies that grow it also have to process it and sell it. That has led to massive cultivation facilities in Central Florida and these really polished dispensaries in Tampa, St. Pete, Miami.
But as the market matures and potentially moves away from strict vertical integration, especially with the 2026 horizon and what looks like a strong push toward full adult recreational use, we expect a surge in demand for smaller, independent processing and distribution hubs.
So if you're an investor in Florida, the time to be looking at industrial land in the I-4 corridor or retail shells in high-traffic coastal areas was technically yesterday, but the opportunity is genuinely still there.
The key is to look for what people call the path of progress. Where are the new residential developments going? Because dispensaries are going to want to be just outside those residential zones, close enough for convenience, far enough to satisfy the setbacks.
And the investor profile is shifting too. It used to be what you might call cowboy investors willing to take on the risk. Now we are seeing institutional capital getting comfortable with Florida's cannabis infrastructure. That is a significant signal.
It really is. So to recap, cannabis real estate offers some of the highest yields in the current commercial market, but it requires a level of specialized knowledge that goes way beyond traditional CRE. You need to be part lawyer, part politician, and a full-time real estate expert.
And if you want to go deeper on all of this, the costs, the licensing requirements, the zoning breakdowns for major Florida counties, head over to support-local-businesses.com. We have detailed guides on the cost to start a dispensary, a directory of commercial brokers who specialize in this niche, and a full breakdown of the 2026 recreational transition.
Check the show notes for direct links. This is one of those episodes I really hope you share with a fellow entrepreneur or investor. There is so much here that is not being talked about in mainstream real estate circles.
Absolutely. And if you found value in today's episode, please leave us a review. It genuinely helps us reach more local business builders across Florida. I'm Jamie, he's Alex, and we will see you in the next episode of the Local Business Playbook. Keep building, stay local, and stay informed.